What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Plant the Spear Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and thanks for tuning in. I apologize for not getting an episode out last week for you guys, but as you know, in the off season, there's just not a ton of stuff to talk about. And, you know, I really don't want to come on here and waste you guys' time with 30 minutes of, say, fluff with really nothing to talk about. So I just kind of, you know, I decided to take a few days off after the grind of the season to kind of, you know, just get some things aligned in my personal life with work and outside of this, and to kind of just kind of clean the slate to get ready for 2023. You know, with all the designs I make and articles and stuff like that, I kind of needed to pile 2022 into one pile, clean out some stuff, and get ready to get like a fresh slate for 2023. And just get ready for the new season ahead. So I decided to take a few days off, but over the past few days, I feel like we have enough stuff now to go ahead and record an episode for you guys. And as promised, I'm not going to spend a ton of time on it because I know you're probably not super interested in it, but I am going to go ahead and grade myself in how I covered FSU this year, just so you guys kind of get an idea of how I did to see if I was worth tuning into. So I think that'll be a fun little segment here at the end. But to start with, I think the biggest news is we know that the schedule is due to come out on the January 30th at 7 p.m. It's currently the 25th at the time of this recording. So, you know, the ACC, of course, has to be just one of the last ones to let their schedule out. But either way, so it comes out the 30th, and we already know the opponents. You know, we know the teams, and we know LSU's first, and we know Florida's last, but we don't know the order that it's going to come in. So we will find that out, and it does make a big difference because you have things like bye weeks. You have, you know, possible back-to-back road games, tough opponents back-to-back. You know, when you think about last year when you had Wake, NC State, and Clemson back-to-back-to-back, maybe if you had spaced those games out, it might have ended differently. It might have been a different result for those three games. So it is important. It is a factor. Before we start making predictions and things for next season, I'd like to see the schedule order. You know, we know it's probably going to be LSU and then either one of your two lesser teams in Southern Miss and North Alabama, because it's a Sunday game. So you're going to want to play that lesser opponent coming off of that game. And we know Florida State traditionally always plays kind of that cupcake game right before the Florida game. So one of those two, Southern Miss, North Alabama, excuse me, will be right before Florida. So we know kind of those four games about where they're going to be. We just don't know the middle meat of the schedule. So we're going to find that out coming up the 30th. And do keep in mind, this is the first year of the new format, which I'm a big fan of. It's going to be the 3-5-5 format. And there are also no divisions this year, which I feel like is how it should have been all along. Now, I know that's how most conferences operated. It's kind of just been status quo, the way things have went over the years. But I think this is a good move for the ACC, and I'm glad they didn't waste time. You know, they decided on it, and they took action. They said, we're going to start this in 2023. We're not going to wait. And you do have your three common opponents or annual opponents you're going to play every year. And for Florida State, that is Clemson, Miami, and Syracuse. You know, Syracuse is kind of an oddball there, but, you can't play the toughest teams in the ACC every single year. You kind of want that one team that maybe you can beat up on a little bit. And you knew it was going to be Clemson because you want those two brands to match up for the good of the conference. And, of course, you got to keep Miami on your schedule annually. But the good thing about this is you do face all 10 other ACC teams. Over a four-year cycle, you face them twice, once at home and once on the road. And to me, I'm a big fan of that because I feel like, you know, the Atlantic is obviously the tougher division, but there's some other games I think would be fun. I think Florida State, Virginia Tech would be a fun matchup. I know they're down right now, but I would like to go to a game and experience Lane Stadium at night in Blacksburg. They say that's one of the coolest, you know, environments around, and that would be something that we never play Virginia Tech. So I would like to see that matchup. Virginia has a beautiful campus. I think it'd be nice to play them more often. So Pitt, we got them on the schedule this year. You know, that should be a fun road game. Hopefully it's not too cold by the time they play them late. You know, if it ends up being later in the year, you know, and I could probably do without Boston College every year or something like that. You know, at least you don't have to play NC State this year. That's nice. So maybe you get a little break from going to Raleigh every other year. And so I'm just excited about this new schedule format, you know, and plus with the no divisions, now you have a chance to, even if you drop a game, say, you know, let's look at 2023. Florida State plays on the road at Clemson. Now, granted, we feel like Florida State has closed the gap against Clemson, but beating Clemson at Death Valley is hard, no matter how you slice it. And the thing is, if in any other year, if you'd have lost that game on the road, you know, Clemson may or may not lose any other ACC games. You would have to have them slip up for you to get a chance to even make the ACC championship game. And so now that's gone. You can now lose that game, still finish second in the ACC, and still play for the ACC championship. So I do think it is better for the conference to get the two highest teams. Now, of course, you know, looking at it from Florida State's point of view, you may have to play Clemson again. It's the same way. If you beat them, it doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to have to play them again now. But at least now you get them in that neutral site environment in Charlotte. And, you know, how many years do we see where, for example, 2013, look at how Florida State and Clemson played. Now, you blew them out too, but when you got Duke playing you in the ACC championship, you knew how that game was going to end. And I believe it was like 45-7. It would have been a much more exciting game had Florida State played Clemson a second time around. You know, when Miami made it, they got absolutely, you know, demolished by Clemson. That probably would have been a lot better if it had been the second best Atlantic team, because we know the Coastal just kind of stinks. And so they've always shooed in that Coastal champion who really didn't put up much of a fight against a tougher Atlantic division. So I'm a big fan of this one. I'm excited about it. I think we're going to end up playing Clemson twice this year, but, you know, that's part of the trade-off of having this new format. So it does help you, and it comes with a little more risk. You know, you could knock your conference leader out of a playoff picture, but, you know, you also have a chance to really bolster your resume at the end of the year if, you know, say you're right on the edge and you get to beat another team like Clemson or something later in the season. So I do think it's a good move by the conference, and I'm excited about it going forward. Some of the games that we'll get to see, some of the road trips we'll get to make and things like that. So do be on the lookout for that. Like I said, January 30th at 7 p.m. when it does get released. And next up, some good news that we got over the last few days. It appears that Dimitri Emmanuel, offensive lineman at Florida State, is going to be back for another year. He is currently listed on the updated Seminoles roster for 2023 and 2024. And, you know, he was a good player for you this year. Transferred in from Charlotte. You know, he was a guy that Alex Atkins coached at Charlotte. He knew what he was getting, and he went out and got him. It was a guy who, I believe he was an ACC either third team or honorable mention. So, you know, a good solid offensive lineman for you. And, you know, now that we know Caden Lyles is probably not coming back because he's not listed on the roster anymore, he's probably going to step into a coaching role after he had a season-ending injury there that kind of ended his career. The good thing about getting Dimitri back is it just provides solid depth. You know, one thing we talked about in the past was how you had guys that would come in from lower level schools like Lamar with Bless Harris. Devontae Love Taylor came in from a lower level school. And these guys came in and were starters day one for you. You know, Dylan Gibbons, who was a great player for you, he was a backup at Notre Dame. Now you're going to have Keandre Jones, Casey Roddick, Darius Washington, if they decide to, you know, keep him inside at guard, which I believe is his more natural position, and Dimitri Emmanuel all competing for that guard slot or the two guard slots. You know, there's no guarantee, I guess, Dimitri's going to start again, but you have now the opportunity to have, you know, four guys competing for two spots who all have significant starting experience at the Power 5 level. So the point of that is you're going from potentially having, you know, group of five guys as your starters to having Power 5 starters as depth players on the offensive line. And so, I mean, this is huge. Like, who would have thought years ago that we would be in this position? So this is Alex Atkins at work here. So this is big, you know, and now you also have a guy like Jeremiah Byers, who was an all-conference player. Granted, it was at a lower level, but, you know, he's an all-conference award winner player with almost 2,000 snaps of experience all at right tackle. That's his natural position. And I know a lot of people projected him to move inside to play guard because of his measurables. But if you have four guys that are all talented vying for two positions, to me, that gives you the ability to let Byers stay at his position at right tackle and compete with Bless Harris and compete with Julian Armella. So again, it just gives you more depth across the board at each position. So this is something that is great news for Florida State to get a talented a quality offensive lineman who was a starter for you back for another year, because continuity on the offensive line is big to begin with. So now you have a handful of guys all with a lot of experience and good players vying for, you know, these positions. So you now have somewhere around seven, eight, nine guys that you feel can step in and start for you. And that provides depth. Whereas, you know, last year when Bless Harris went down, we saw a little bit of inconsistency at right tackle as guys tried to fill that position. So now you feel a lot better about where they stand going forward. And, you know, all that plays into what this team is trying to accomplish in 2023. And you're going to need depth to do that. You know, we saw in a recent interview with Pro Football Focus where Jordan Travis, despite all the Heisman hype that's being thrown his way, you know, that he didn't necessarily ask for, he said, look, I came here to win a national championship and not a Heisman. And I do think this team has their eyes on winning it all next year. Now, is that guaranteed to happen? Of course not, because, you know, it's tough to win a national championship. You look at TCU got all the way there and got embarrassed by Georgia. So, you know, there's no guarantee, definitely. I'm sure Michigan didn't think they were going to lose to TCU. So there's no guarantee, but that's their goal. That is the level that this team is ready to play for now. And I do think you're going to see an instance where they get double-digit regular season wins, compete for an ACC title, and be in the position to put themselves in a run at the playoffs. And so that's big. That is big for this program, big for this team, and it's going to pay a lot of dividends going forward, because the next thing we're going to get into is a little bit of recruiting talk. And you guys know I don't necessarily cover the nitty-gritty of recruiting down to every little detail, who visited, you know, did a 2025 kid enjoy his visit at Florida State? I don't really talk a whole lot about that because, you know, we see guys who have been committed for a year not sign with Florida State. They flip somewhere else, you know, a Travis Hunter, a Keldrick Falk, a thing like that. So 2 years out is still a really long way to start worrying about recruits. You know, if you commit or you sign, I'm going to talk about you because I just don't have a lot of the resources to keep up with that, and I can't be there to do interviews afterwards and stuff like that. You guys get the point. But anyway, you know, having that successful season again in 2023 after you just had a successful season in 2022, that's going to continue to pay dividends and help you out in that high school recruiting. Because, you know, when you recruit a transfer portal player, and we see the success that the staff has had in the transfer portal, you can sell these guys like, okay, Jermaine Johnson was a first round pick on a bad team. So you can still sell them that you can feature them in on your team despite not being where you want to be in the win-loss column. They will come and help you rebuild because they know they can be a part of that and they can still put up the stats and the film that they need. Whereas a lot of times high school recruits, they want to be a part of some, you know, a ship that's already sailing. You know, they want to be on a Georgia and an Alabama and things like that. You know, it's a tougher sell to get them to come to a 5-7 team. And so that's where you're going to see this success on the field really start to roll into these classes. You know, 2023 had some really good players in there. You got a 5-star Hakeem Williams and things. You know, you're getting that higher caliber player. And 2024 is really starting to look like it's going to be a cornerstone class for Florida State. And it's already top four in the country, fourth overall per 247 composite. So, and they could still add to that. They have some really talented prospects that have been on campus through the junior day, some 2024 players that have been on campus. And the thing is, like, they're not just getting these players on campus like they were before. You know, we always talked about Florida State was able to get these players on campus, but a lot of them they weren't really legitimately in the mix for. And now you're starting to see where they're being projected to land some of these big players. They're getting some of these big players. And so that is big. You know, the staff has been out doing a lot of recruiting, especially in Florida and Georgia. You know, they're trying to really take advantage of Miami and Florida being down right now, them being the best team in the state. You know, you now have Patrick Surtain who's out on the trail, giving you that connection in South Florida. And, you know, now that you have your DB coach in place, there's not a whole lot of question there. And these kids are going to want to come play for a guy like that, a guy who had a successful college career, successful NFL career. You know, it was a successful high school coach and coached in the NFL and has those connections. So, you know, you're going to see the defensive back recruiting pick up on the trail. So that's the thing that they've been really doing here the last few days, is just getting out recruiting. They're also going through the tour of duty with the current players on the roster, you know, just kind of get everybody in shape, let them, you know, this is one of them, you know, Mike Norvell always says, like, this is going to be the hardest thing you ever do if you commit to Florida State. It's not going to be easy. And I think the tour of duty is kind of like that smack in the face of like, this is it, man. This is going to be hard. This isn't going to be easy. So they're getting everybody ready for that, kind of testing your grit there as well. But, you know, like I said, when you look at how the staff recruits, I really love how they address the roster on a need-by-need basis based on who's out there as well. Of course, they're going to recruit the high school players. They're going to go after the Hakeem Williams. They're going to go after, you know, some of these, the Cam Davis in 2024, the five-star running backs. They're going to go after these guys. But if the players are there in the portal, you know, plug-and-play, ready-made, day-one contributors, why would you not go after them? You know, I like how they manage this almost like an NFL roster. You know, you go out and you get the veteran players at the positions that you need them. You bring in the younger rookies and let them develop for the future at positions where you may not need them to contribute day one. So I really like the mix that the staff is able to do between high school and portal recruiting. And as they get more successful, you're going to continue to elevate the level of high school recruits you're bringing in. So I think that is big too. You know, that way, if they say maybe there's not someone available in the portal, like say there's no good receivers in the portal or whatever, now you have those receivers there. Now you have some of the other positions taken care of. So you can only add if you want to, not necessarily because you have to. So I do think that's big. And we're just going to talk real quick about 2024, Tribe 24, if you want to call it. So like I said, they're currently ranked fourth overall on the 247 composite, top five class, 8 current commits. So not a whole lot of commits, but they do have an average recruit ranking of 90.67, which is the highest class average rating since 2018. So again, you see how they continue to trend up with the quality of players that they're bringing in. You're currently the top class in the ACC. So there's a kind of another feather in the cap if you can kind of keep this momentum going. Looking at some of the commits that they currently have, like we already mentioned, five-star running back slash athlete Cam Davis, who's a player I am extremely excited about. This guy looks like a football player. He is just built solid, you know, kind of like a Dalvin 2.0. He even wears number 4. I'm just really excited about seeing this guy in Garnet and Gold. I think he's going to be a huge, big-time player. And, you know, the other thing that we talk about where when you look at like 2021, and what was a position that you could sell quality at Florida State? You know, you had a proven track record. It was defensive end. You had Jermaine Johnson, you had Kier Thomas, and you had two other guys in J-Rob and Kando previously go to the NFL. So that helps you bring in a guy like Jared Verse. Well, now you're starting to see, why would you not want to play running back for Mike Norvell when you look at a guy like Trey Benson, like Toa Fili, like Trayshawn Ward? You know, you have all these guys that are now showing out on the field. You have receivers that you can point to and say, look, that can be you. You know, quarterback, when you see what Jordan Travis is doing and all the hype he's getting, now you're going to start to see those positions pick up too, because now you can show them how you can feature them in your offense. And they don't say this offense is built for playmakers for nothing. It's just they didn't have a whole lot of film to sell at some of these positions at Florida State until this year. Now you can show how you can feature those guys. So continuing down the list, you have 4-star safety Jordan Pride committed, 4-star wide receiver Camden Fryer, 4-star quarterback Luke Cromanhawk, who can absolutely spin the ball. I think this is going to be the future at the position for Florida State. 4-star safety CJ Hurd, 3-star defensive lineman Jamori Flagg, and 3-star defensive lineman Keyshawn Mashburn. And maybe the most crucial recruit of the whole class, and I say this a little tongue-in-cheek, but you also have Jake Weinberg committed, who is the number one kicker in the country. And like I said, it may be tongue-in-cheek, but after what we saw last year, listen, the number one kicker in the country is absolutely crucial because, you know, look how big the Aguayo brothers were for you while they were here. And if you could have another guy who's consistent and you can rely on like that, that's going to be big for this team because they are going to have some pieces to replace after this season. So, you know, you may be in some closer games. You may need that kicker to decide games. And I'm pretty happy about having the number one kicker in the country committed. You also see where 247 recently came out and said Florida State is the team to beat for 2024 five-star cornerback Charles Lester. He has visited Florida State 5 times now, and with Patrick Surtain being named the new DB coach, there's no more question about who's going to be his coach. And I mean, like I said, why would you not want to come play for a guy who you know knows the position, has played at a high level, and has NFL connections? So, you know, that's probably going to help you land him. And if you think about it, now you're looking, if you're able to get him in the boat, you're looking at a 5-star cornerback and 2 4-star safeties. You know, that's the type of stuff that puts DBU back on the map. That's the type of stuff that you reclaim that crown, because we know Florida State has had some talented secondary players that they just really haven't got a whole lot out of. You know, maybe that's coaching. Maybe that's you need a little bit more talented guys. You know, I don't think Kevin Knowles and Omarion Cooper, and I don't think those guys are bad players. I just think, you know, maybe the better coaching will help elevate their skill set this year. You already have the young guy in Azaria Thomas, who's going to be a star later on in his career, probably starting next year. You know, he got a lot of trial by fire as a freshman this year. So, again, this is just the things that roll that momentum going forward that I'm really excited about. And like we said, if they can have another successful season in 2023, I mean, you're going to see some fireworks for this 24 class. This could really be the turning point that gets Florida State back in the national picture for years to come in the future, you know, by having these big-time recruits. Because you know how high school kids work. Like, you see a couple of big guys commit, then all of a sudden people want to be a part of that, and then, you know, they recruit other players, and then they sign, and, you know, so it's just, it's kind of that snowball momentum, and that's something that I'm really looking at if they can have that successful season on the field like we expect them to. Especially if you can have Norvell go in and start recruiting these 24 and 25 guys with, you know, say after the season, maybe he does have an ACC championship ring on his finger and stuff like that. That's going to play well in the future. It's going to pay dividends. And so that's pretty much it on the recruiting right now. I don't have a whole lot else on it. You know, as things progress, we'll obviously take some notes and get back with you guys. And so to kind of get into the last segment of this podcast, I hope you guys stay tuned in for this part because it's going to be a little fun. I'm going to grade myself, whether I was right, whether I was wrong, and I'm not going to bore you with like every single thing I said throughout the season, just some of the highlights, because this was my first year covering Florida State, and I was nervous, you know what I mean? I didn't want to come out here and look like a dummy, like I didn't know what I was talking about. You know, and this is not to take a victory lap. This is not to pat myself on the back, because if I was wrong, I'll admit it. I'm a humble guy. I don't believe in having a big ego and things like that. So, you know, I'm not going to lie, though. Some of the things when I started going through taking my notes, I was like, wow, that was, I mean, almost number for number with some of the things that I had predicted preseason. And so, you know, this is mostly just about showing you guys that, you know, or basically stating my case of, should you trust me for your Florida State coverage? Should you listen to what I have to say? Do I even know what I'm talking about? Because I feel like a lot of times people make accusations and predictions and they don't ever go back and visit them. They don't ever know how they did, because one, it's going to help you improve going forward. You know, how if you did good or you did bad, you can see areas where I can improve in my coverage. It's also going to kind of let you guys know, you know, is what I told you guys, was it worth listening to and reading? So with that being said, we're going to go through a few of the things, mostly from the preseason magazine and some of the articles on our website from the preseason. All this stuff is still up on the website. It is unedited. So if you want to fact check me, by all means, I encourage you to go read some of this stuff. And so with that being said, we're just going to get into it, guys. So the first thing I want to point out was I did a spotlight on Jordan Travis as the quarterback, because obviously it's the most important position on the field. And a lot of people said, I've heard on other outlets say that like no one thought Jordan Travis was going to have a year like this. And he exceeded my expectations. But one of the things I wrote in the feature was how I thought we knew about his legs. We already knew he was a talented runner, but a lot of people say he's a running back playing quarterback. And I said, you know what? I think he's an underrated passer who can have a really big year if he has better wide receiver and better offensive line play, which we believed he was going to have. You know, I compared him to some other quarterbacks in the ACC who, you know, at the time we believed were the better passers in the league. And the two I compared him to was Tyler Van Dyke and Sam Hartman. Now, you know, we know Miami has kind of wasted that skill set down there in Tyler Van Dyke after seeing a huge regression this year. But the point remains, he was one of the better ones in 2021, as well as Sam Hartman. Now, I had to use percentages because Jordan had far less attempts than the other quarterbacks. But I compared him across 22 different metrics in a table, which you can still see in the preseason magazine on our website. And so what I did was I found that in multiple categories, Jordan was percentage-wise on par or better or not far behind these other two quarterbacks who were believed to be two of the best passers in the conference. And so I was like, you know, he's if he were to have a similar sample set, not splitting reps with another quarterback, you know, how could he do? I feel like he, you know, when you look at the percentages across all these categories, he's right there lockstep with everybody. So I think he's a better passer than you think. And all that is considering he had, there's no nice way to say this, probably the worst receiving core in the ACC in 2021 and an offensive line that struggled. So again, you know, if he's on par with these other guys and has kind of the worst tools to work with, if you give him those tools and you give him the experience and you give him another season, you know, of experience in the system and let him be the lone starter and he can stay healthy, he can have a really special season. And so here's what I did. And I know it's not an exact science, but this is kind of how I projected what the season was that I thought Jordan could have if he could maintain these percentages over the course of a full season. So I went back and I found some other quarterbacks throughout Norvell's offensive coordinator and head coach history that had a similar skill set to Jordan. And the one I found that was the most comparable was Taylor Kelly at Arizona State in 2013. So I looked at the season that he had, and I looked at the season that Jordan had, and I projected, okay, let's take Jordan's yards per attempt passing and yards per carry rushing, how many passing touchdowns he averaged per game, how many rushing touchdowns he averaged per game, and let's project as if he was a full-time starter in an offense that functioned how Mike Norvell's offense should function. And so now, to be fair, Taylor Kelly had 14 games, whereas Jordan only had 13 this year. So Jordan actually really outperformed what I thought he was going to do. In 2021, he had averaged 7.9 yards per attempt passing and 4 yards per carry rushing. In 2022, he averaged 9.1 yards per attempt passing and 8 yards per carry rushing. So obviously, his averages skyrocketed. But when you look at what Taylor Kelly did in 2013, I thought, okay, well, if he can have a similar season to what he did, Florida State would be in a really good position. And Taylor Kelly had 484 passing attempts that year. Now, I didn't think they were going to let Jordan or have Jordan be throwing the ball almost 500 times. But if you took his 2021 stats and projected them using that Taylor Kelly number of attempts and things like that, Jordan would have ended up last season with, in 2021, 3,830 yards and 23 touchdowns. If you looked at him having 173 rushing attempts at 4.0 yards per carry, he would have had 686 yards and 11 touchdowns. So when you look at his actual stats, this year he had 353 attempts for 3,208 yards, 24 touchdowns. I mean, that's almost identical there, especially if you'd added another game, because Florida State averaged 247 yards per game, so that would have put him at 3,455 yards. Rushing, he ran the ball a lot less this year, 44 attempts, 533 yards, and 7 touchdowns. And if you'd add the extra game at 41 yards per game on average rushing, he would have been at 574 yards. So, you know, now if he had had 484 attempts, he would have ended up with 4,404 yards and 1,384 yards rushing. Now, that's a Heisman season. You know, there's no doubt. If he'd had that, Florida State probably would have, you know, been undefeated and he'd have won the Heisman. But at the same time, like, I just thought Jordan could have that 3,000-yard season. I thought he could have a good season on the ground, and that ended up being the case. You know, so I didn't predict that Jordan was going to win the Heisman, but I thought he could be one of the better quarterbacks in the ACC given he had the tools to perform in Norvell's offense like his offense is supposed to perform. And I'm going to give a little bit more on that later. But next up, I want to go through the record prediction that I had. So I put out the ceiling. Now, I put out a graphic, you know, beginning what I thought their ceiling, their floor, and their actual most likely record prediction would be, because I knew there was a lot of variables that could happen with this team. You know, if Jordan would have missed significant time, I think the season would have obviously went a complete different direction. But, you know, there was a few things we didn't know about Sam Hartman at the time, whether he was going to be playing or not. Now, if you go through and you read the article where I have the record prediction and I break down, it's like a 2022 schedule win-loss projection or something like that. It's on our website. And there's a podcast and everything on this. So I predicted that they would go have a ceiling of 10-2. Now, this is regular season only. And a most likely record of 8-4 with a floor of 6-6. So game by game, I predicted Duquesne, they would win 51-6. They ended up winning 47-7. So pretty close there. I thought that LSU, they would get the win. Because, again, it was game one under Brian Kelly. I thought Florida State got the warm-up game. I predicted they were going to win that game 27-24. They ended up winning 24-23. So, again, that was pretty good. That was pretty good there. Louisville, I predicted they would win that game on the road 34-30. They ended up winning 35-31. And, like, guys, I'm not making this up. I did not edit any of these scores. I'm just telling you what I wrote down straight from the article. So, Boston College, I predicted they would win that game 31-17. They ended up winning 44-14. Now, Wake Forest, I had to kind of go two paths here. I had to go with Sam Hartman and without, because originally, you know, it was a undiagnosed, like, medical, they didn't share any information. It looked like he was probably going to miss a majority of the season. He missed a whole one game. And so I said in the article, if Sam Hartman is back with a few games to get in rhythm, which was the case, I thought Wake Forest would win because they just had that offense was going to be a little too much for Florida State. I predicted Wake to win 34-27. And we know that they won 31-21. Now, I thought without Hartman, Florida State would have won something like 34-17, but I guess we'll never know. Now, I did even make a joke in the article where I thought Florida State, I said, yes, I understand I'm predicting Florida State to start 4-1 or 5-0, and no, I haven't been drinking. Yes, I am sober when I'm writing this. Because after starting 0-4 last year, to predict them, and I even said this in the article, to predict them to win upwards of 10 games, I have to back it up with reasons why. And I went through and I gave a lot more reasoning in the article. And so then I predicted them to lose the next two. I predicted them to lose, you know, obviously that would have been three in a row if they had Sam Hartman back, and that was the case. So I predicted them to lose NC State next because Raleigh's just a hard place to play. And NC State was supposed to be one of the favorites to win the ACC this year. Now, I understand after they lost Devin Leary, that changed things. But I predicted Florida State to lose that game 28-17, and they lost 19-17. Clemson, I predicted them to lose just because Clemson was just a little bit higher on a talent level. We didn't really know a lot about Florida State until, you know, they had beat LSU and things like that. I predicted Florida State to lose that one 24-17 in a close one, and they ended up losing 34-28. Georgia Tech, I predicted them to get the win here 38-13. The final score was 41-16. Miami, this is the one where I was kind of wrong on. I predicted them to win the game, but I thought it would be 21-20. And as we know, it was a 45-3 absolute beatdown. I didn't expect Miami to take that much of a step back. And that's something that I think caught a lot of people by surprise. It was one of the most disappointing teams in the country last year. So I am willingly happy to admit I was dead wrong on that. Now, I mean, I thought they were going to beat Miami. I saw some people thought we were going to lose to Miami. I just didn't think that was the case. But I didn't see it being 45-3. Now, Syracuse next up, I predicted them to win that game 31-27. Again, this one was a bigger spread than I thought, 38-3. Now, they started 6-0, I believe, but then they kind of fell off later in the season. I believe that had a lot to do with them just playing harder competition. Kind of had a soft schedule early in the year, but the win was right. The score was not so much. Louisiana, for some reason, I noticed when I was making my notes, I actually didn't give a score prediction, but of course, I predicted a win there, and they won 49-17. Florida, I predicted them to end the regular season with a win over Florida 31-28. They ended up winning 45-38. And so in the end of that article in the wrap-up section, I predicted Florida State to end the regular season 10-2 or 9-3 if Sam Hartman was back and had time to get in rhythm. And I mean, it was dead on. Like I said, this is not about me being right or wrong. This is not a pat on the back for me. This is just showing that, like, you know, I feel like I did pretty good in my first year covering Florida State. And kind of nailed the record prediction there. So with that being said, one of the things when I talked about Norvell's offense, and this is something that is kind of crazy, and I think you guys are going to kind of enjoy this too, but I talked about how Mike Norvell's offense, over 8 years of sole offensive coordinator or head coach, what his career averages were compared to what they were in 2020 and 2021 at Florida State, and how I believed 8 years of data over 1 year in a disjointed COVID year when he's taken over a mess of a team that he had to rebuild the culture and rebuild the roster. So my thing was, I don't think Norvell forgot how to call an offense because he moved to Tallahassee. I made a joke about, you know, Tallahassee is not the Bermuda Triangle of football coaching. You know, he's they are likely to fix this roster and fix this culture and trend back towards the 8 years of data over the 2 years that he's had at Florida State. And so, guys, this is pretty nuts. And I promise you, like, you can, again, you can fact check me on this if you want. So the career averages, and this is why you put in the work. This is why you go through and you look at the data. You don't count necessarily for feelings as much as you do hard numbers. So over Norvell's career, this is 8 years into one average. So they're passing the average 62.7 completion percentage on 466 pass attempts, 3,804 yards in a season, 32 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Now, a lot of those, keep in mind, a lot of those seasons had a bowl game and stuff like that, and maybe a conference championship, so there may have been an extra game in there. So in 2022, because we know 2021 was way off the mark, and that was the point that I made where I felt like there's a lot of gas in the tank left in this offense. I'm still bullish on it. I know that if they get the pieces to run Norvell's offense the way it was at Memphis, the way it was at Arizona State, those numbers will trend back up. So keep in mind, 466 pass attempts, 62.7 completion percentage, 3,804 yards, 32 touchdowns, 10 picks. 2022, Florida State had 443 passing attempts with a 62.8% completion percentage, only 1/10 of a percentage off here. 3,506 yards, 28 touchdowns, and 7 interceptions. And if you added in that extra game, it would have been 3,753 yards. So, and probably about 30 touchdowns. I didn't do the touchdown math on that one. I mean, you are like within 50 yards. It's pretty insane. And so when you look at the rushing over his career average, it was 545 attempts per season with 2,629 yards and 30 touchdowns. In 2022, Florida State had 463 rushing attempts, 2,932 yards, and 33 touchdowns. So they actually surpassed his career average because we know this is a good rushing team. And, you know, one of the things I talked about is with Alex Atkins, your offensive line coach, now an offensive coordinator, you can tailor this offense to the skill set up front, which we know has been a weakness for Florida State. So I thought they'd have a good season rushing. Now, this is kind of nuts, guys. I'm serious. Like, this is crazy. The total offense for Norvell over his career average is 6,432 yards in a season with 62 touchdowns. In 2022, Florida State had 6,438 yards, 6 yards difference, and 61 touchdowns, 1 touchdown different. How crazy is that? And like I said, that's why before you say, you know, Norvell can't coach this offense, we brought him here to be an offensive coordinator and it's not living up to the hype or whatever, look at the data. You know what I mean? Look at it. And that's why I did it. And that's why I kept harping that I was confident that if they had the pieces, they could get back to there. And now, you know, you're looking at they're within 6 yards and a touchdown of what his career average is. And, you know, the more talent they continue to bring in, they're going to bump those averages up. That doesn't mean he can't surpass those. And so that was kind of crazy. That stat was one of the ones where I was like, I could not believe it when I went back and read it. And the other thing in the article I had wrote about Alex Atkins, and it was like 3 or 4 pages called The Atkins Effect. It's also on the website about how Florida State's continued to trend up, you know, in recruiting and the amount of sacks allowed per game and the amount of rushing yards per game. And we saw that again be the case in 2022. Now, there was a lot of other things, position group by position group, where I went through and made some predictions that were pretty spot on, some didn't really pan out that well. But for the most part, you know, you guys can, again, all this is available still on our website if you guys want to go check that out. I don't want to spend too much time on this. And the last thing I will mention here was the three keys I thought would project Florida State or propel Florida State to a successful season was to, first off, stay healthy. Now, you're going to say, well, duh, everybody needs to stay healthy. But this was, you know, this was really about Jordan Travis, if he could stay healthy or not, because that would have really changed the trajectory of your season. Now, I know Tate Rodemaker came in and won the Louisville game on the road, you know, but you also had Johnny Wilson out here just mossing guys and they refused to give double coverage. So, you know, either way, but I knew they had to stay healthy because they didn't have a lot of depth, but they had some talented players. Now, they did stay overall pretty relatively healthy. It would have probably been a better season had you not have lost Caden Lyles and Bless Harris and Fabian Lovett for most of the season. The next thing was potential equals production. Because one thing I talked about was how, yes, I am overly excited about Trey Benson, Micah Pittman, and Johnny Wilson. These are names that I feel like were going to be, you know, big-time players. But they didn't really have a lot of college production to go off. You know, Trey Benson didn't really do much at Oregon because he got injured. Micah Pittman left because he wasn't getting enough touches. And Johnny Wilson, the same story. And I knew Jared Verse had a lot of production, but it wasn't at the Power 5 level. And I said in the article where if these guys' production can match the preseason excitement, the potential that we see in them, Florida State would have a nice season. And man, that is exactly what happened. You know, Trey Benson ended up being a certified dude. Johnny Wilson was just unreal at receiver, you know, outside of the drop problems. You know, again, he had, it was over 800 yards of receiving, and Micah Pittman played a key role. You know, one thing I mentioned there was that no wide receiver had over 400 yards in 2021 or a single 100-yard game. You know, we saw multiple receivers have a 100-yard game. Johnny Wilson had a 200-yard game. They had two receivers go over 400 yards last year. And the final key that I said was to fix special teams because it was absolutely abysmal in 2021. Now, of course, the kicking this year really was not good. But when you look at all other aspects, you know, I talked about how Florida State had not had a kick return touchdown since the 2013 title game. You know, I don't think they had returned a punt since 2018 for a touchdown. They did have one this year with Trey Benson against Boston College. When you look at the kick return numbers, they finished the season ranked 13th in kick return this year compared to 70th in 2021. Kick return defense was 75th this year compared to 122nd in 2021. Punt return defense was 24th in 2022 compared to 118th in 2021. And punt return defense was 47th compared to 81st in 2021. So huge improvement across the board on special teams. And I really do think it helped because Florida State really kind of hurt itself a lot in field position through special teams in 2021. And that was not so much the case this season. So those were the little things that I thought, you know, if they're able to add them up, it'll project them or propel them to a better season. And a lot of that, you know, did end up being the case. And, you know, I'll look at that again next year. When you look at things like, you know, beating the better teams on your schedule was one I talked about. When you look at cutting out the self-inflicted mistakes, that's going to be one for 2023 and things like that. So, and the last thing was when I wrapped up the magazine, I kind of put my final thoughts, you know, a final wrap up of how just I felt about the season, and I described my feelings as cautiously optimistic. I knew this team could have a better season than a lot of people expected, but they were going to have some things go right. They were going to have that staying healthy. They were going to have that potential equal production. They were going to have to fix some of the things. And, you know, despite the constant letdowns to Jacksonville State's, to getting blown out in multiple games, starting 0-4, I still felt good about the direction Florida State was headed under Mike Norvell and the things you saw later in 2021. I thought he had fixed the culture. I thought he had raised the talent level. I thought the team was more mentally, physically, and emotionally prepared to be successful. Now, I still had reservations about them putting that together in the win column against a tough schedule. Because one of the things that I said was even if they have a good season, it may not be reflected in the win column because you're still facing programs that are in full stride in program history. For example, you know, Wake Forest, Clemson, and NC State are the three that I named in the article that they're at the high point of their program history. You know, they got their uber talent and experienced guys and veteran guys and a roster full of veterans. And Florida State was still coming out of that rebuild. And so you just kind of are catching them at a bad time. And that ended up being the three games that you lost. And now we do know going forward in 2023 that those tables have kind of started to turn and that Florida State is now going to be that team with the experience, with the continuity and bringing back their players. So it's going to be a little different there. And like I said, I pointed out in there that I thought Florida State could start as good as 5-0 and win as many as 9 games in the regular season. And they could be as bad as 6-6 if they had key injuries or don't bring their A game. And I said that we'll know a lot about this team after the first two games. And that was the case. I mean, they went out and they smacked Duquesne in a very vanilla game plan, how we kind of thought they should have. And then they went on the road and beat LSU. So it made you feel better, you know, throughout the season, how they were going to perform. Now, my week-by-week prediction, I think I did predict them to beat Wake Forest because I kind of started drinking the Kool-Aid I kind of let myself get wrapped up in what they were doing. But again, you know, you always got to see how things progress throughout the season and adjust expectations. But that's it for grading myself, and that's kind of where we're going to wrap the episode up. And so, like I said, guys, you know, this is not about me taking a victory lap or trying to be arrogant in any way or anything like that. This is just about me going back and grading myself, you know, on a public stage and sharing it with you guys to show, you know, how I did and to see, like, man, I better not listen to that guy anymore. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Or like, okay, you know, he did pretty good year one. We'll give him another shot next year. And so that was the whole point of this exercise, just kind of putting all this out there. But like I said, again, I mean, if you want to fact check me, the preseason magazine from last year is still available on our website. And, you know, I'm probably going to put this out on social media, I guess. Why not? And a lot of the articles are still available, unedited, unupdated on our website at plantthespear.com. So with that being said, guys, you know, I just appreciate you guys trusting me to give you coverage on Florida State. I appreciate all your support throughout the year. And hopefully I did a good job. Hopefully I earned that follow. I earned that listen and everything for you guys. Because like I said, I'm a humble guy and I just want to put in the work and do the absolute best I can to earn your trust, to earn that follow. You know, it's like Battle's End said, the NIL collective. You know, we want to watch us work and then decide if we are the one for you. So, you know, that's kind of what it was like, watch me work. And then at the end of the year, we'll kind of wrap things up and look at how I did. And if you feel that I can be a trusted source for you guys, then, you know, we'll look at it again in 2023. So, you know, with that being said, you know, I have to say, I felt like I did pretty good year one. And I do appreciate all the love and support that you guys showed me throughout the season. And I, you know, this thing grew beyond anything that I could have expected. And I'm so excited about the future going forward. You know, we're going to do some big things, and it's just an exciting future. You know, it's exciting at Florida State with things, the direction of the program and just as a whole. So again, guys, I really do appreciate everything. Each like, each comment, each, you know, direct message I get, each DM, everything from you guys, I really do appreciate it. I try to interact with everybody as much as I can. I try to stay really active because this is a community. This is not just about me. This is about all you guys, you know, being a part of a community here at Plant the Spear. So again, thank you guys. And as always, the way we always end it, go Noles.